What kind of situation do you find, or do you find that you can create a situation where these sparks happen more often? And what then propels them into action so they're actually going to be reality?
Hi, and welcome to episode 75 of Art Juice, honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking, with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And we've had a bit of a bumpy start to this podcast with microphone problems and internet problems, and so hopefully the rest of it will go more smoothly. We have an interesting topic for you today. We thought that it would be nice to talk about something a little bit upbeat, since so much of what's going on around us is not upbeat. And so we're going to talk about a subject that Alice suggested, which is finding the creative spark. But first of all, before we get to that, what have you been working on this week, Alice?
I've been back to the studio, which is where the idea came from, because it always does, doesn't it? Ha ha. So anyway, it felt really good. And it was funny, as I was leaving the house and going there, I said to my husband, it feels like I'm escaping. So it was very nice. I'm not sure if what painting I actually did that day had any improvement on what was there before, but I don't really care.
That doesn't matter, does it?
No.
Sometimes it's just going.
No. So I'm all excited now about ordering big new canvases, and of course they're just out of stock everywhere. Damn it.
Are they?
Yeah. So I'm trying to not even with, you know, one says you're due in 20th of July or something. I can't wait that long. So I'm trying to weigh up whether I get some really expensive ones made, or whether I order all the stretcher bars and make them myself. I got really excited because the canvas is quite cheap, but the stretcher bars are really expensive.
I saw somebody on Instagram doing a painting on canvas on the floor, just flat canvas, you know, no stretch bars. And it looks so much fun. And I thought, oh, maybe I should just buy a big roll of canvas, do that, and then worry about the stretcher bars afterwards.
Well, I wondered that, apart from I really like my edges. I really like feeling where the edge of the painting is and pushing off towards that. But yeah, that would be an advantage in just ordering the canvas now and then maybe ordering the stretcher bars later. But you're still committed to it then. If doing the stretching is a complete nightmare, you've got these paintings on canvas, then it's like, oh, this is another thing to learn.
But at least, it would make you do it, wouldn't it? Whereas... oh, just a thought. You see, you're quite handy, so I could see you coming up with a way to make stretcher bars. There's no way on earth I could do that.
I think putting them together, and then you have to have you have canvas pliers to pull it tight, an electric stapler, which I've got. But it's just, do I want to spend my time doing that?
No, have some made. Have some made.
Yeah. Okay.
That's easy.
So that's my week. What about yours?
So I've been painting as well, squeezing in bits of painting and getting really excited by what's happening, because finally, after probably a year of developing these ideas for the Ted Hughes project, some things have started to come out which start to feel like what I want them to feel like. I don't want to say I've finished anything finished, but I've got things that feel good. And so that's really exciting. And it's actually also... after our conversation last week about the idea of loneliness and connection and why I think that's important to me, more and more ideas are coming to me about ways I can position myself with my work and talk about it on my website and redesign my website and do Instagram stories. And all these ideas are coming, but I'm so busy because I'm preparing for my annual course that I have to have them bubbling in the background and not get tempted to go off and start trying to do them. So I'm just carrying a little notebook around and jotting things down as I think about them. But this is a good topic for this week, because for me, I feel really creative in several different ways at the moment, in a way that I didn't feel, you know, a few months ago.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be quite good having that enforced pause. It gives a, gives you time to review things, and your mind keeps working and either still keeps improving on things, or you realize that actually I can ditch that quite happily and not go through with it. Here's a question though. Do you think that as, I don't know if it's just for creative people or just in general, it's a million times easier to be excited by something that's happening in the future, like, oh, I've got this potential idea and stuff that you've actually got to do now?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. When I get down to doing the redesign of my website and writing all this copy, it won't be half as exciting as the thought of it is.
Yeah.
The little sparks. I like that's the spark of creativity. The title you suggested is such a good way of describing it. It's like little sparks go off in your head and you go, ooh, and you write them down. I don't know about you, but I have many, many, many things like that. I've even mentioned some of them on here that then just don't go anywhere.
Yeah, fizzle
they're
off.
They're little sparks, but they fizzle out. Yeah, they don't shoot off like a firework. They just go... And that's okay, I think. I think we have to have loads of those.
Yeah, I was going to... does it matter? Because I think for me, it's a bit like when it happens, you get that dopamine hit, don't you?
Yeah.
That zings you up. I'm not a massive coffee drinker, but it's like, I imagine, really good kind of cup of coffee is, or...
Yeah.
When it's a really hot day and you have that first cold fizzy beer and you just think, oh.
It's a bit early for beer. Don't make me think about beer. But I used to work for somebody in a non-creative field, but he was the CEO and he was very creative. He always had these great marketing ideas, but for every good one, he'd have 10 awful ones that people would have to talk him down from and say, no, that's really not a good idea. We shouldn't do that because of whatever reason. It was a music chain, and one of his ideas was to have Alice Cooper come on the roof of the store and throw real money down into the street, which we did, which, you know, the police had to come and all sorts. So anybody in Toronto might remember that back in the 90s. But a lot of his ideas were terrible. But that, I was thinking about that in terms of when you're working on your own as a creative, you've got no team of people to say, No, don't do that.
No one to talk you down.
Yeah. So you just get all these little fizzes, and sometimes you can run off in the wrong direction, or they fizzle out. Usually, I think what happens, you try them and they just don't work. I suppose it's not that dire. We're not running a business in that sense. So we're not going to send millions of dollars in revenue off the wrong way if we do something wrong. But
I think that's probably quite a good thing, though. I think actually, if you have that excitement of an idea and you get enough momentum behind it to want to do it, there can't be anything wrong in going ahead and trying it. I'm not sure I want anybody to talk me down. What I want is more people to talk me up and encourage me into doing things. That's much harder. Don't want any more people talking me down.
Yeah.
I could probably do with that, but I think for most people, it's having something that propels it. So maybe this is the question. What propels... Well, there's two things. What kind of situation do you find, or do you find that you can create a situation where these sparks happen more often? And what then propels them into action so they're actually going to be reality?
I was just thinking when he said, can you create a situation? I'm not that thoughtful about it. So I was just thinking, is there anything special about this time now? And honestly, the only thing I can think of is that I went in and painted. That's why the creative side of the creative sparks about the ideas about how to position my art and build an audience came from our conversation with Brian. That was a very specific thing. So I think talking to other people, which is something as artists we really don't do very much.
Yep.
We're often on our own. So just outside input.
Because it's an extra thing. I think creativity comes often from making different connections between two things that you already know about. So if you talk to another person, you get that other input, you get that other side of it, don't you, automatically?
Yeah, and just something they say, and I don't think it needs to be even another artist. Sometimes it's something completely different. So outside input, I think, but for the painting side, for me, it really is less thinking and more just going in and doing something. And it's the point. Do you have this? I had two paintings that were sitting there for the last few months and I just didn't want to mess them up, but they weren't right. Mm. And then this just one day this week, I just thought, well, what mess what up? I don't like it as it is.
Yeah, and they can't stay where they are.
Yeah. And then half an hour later, one of them was completely transformed and almost done because I just went for it. And then that gave me the creative spark impetus to want to work on the other one, which hasn't worked out as well. But doesn't matter because I'm back on working on it again. So I think doing it for me is so important. We can sit around thinking about why we can't do it, and that just makes it worse. What about you?
Well, I think I agree with you that it's about getting in there and doing it. And that's certainly what it was for me this week. But I think in terms of creating the situation where it's possible, it's about making sure that you're not overlayered with other things. I think it needs space. You need space and you need time for this to happen because you need that empty void for different ideas to come to the surface. And I think often we're busy doing a lot of things. We're busy doing tasks that we do every day. Maybe we're busy with routines that until now have worked for us, which is great. That can be very productive. But I think without giving yourself a gap, without giving yourself a void, it's difficult for new things to come up. So I think it's a mix for me of making sure that I've got that time, and that can be anything from lying in the bath without reading a book, going for a walk without listening to a podcast, you know, traveling on the tube. I said this week, that's what I'm really missing, traveling on the tube and see. Because it's that mix of being outside of my situation into another situation where I have all sorts of stimulus that's exciting to me, you know, posters and, you know, creative exhibitions that are going on, and it just sparks ideas. So it's that mix for me of putting myself into a space where I'm not doing anything and also open to new stimulus. So that's what I'm talking about, creating a space where that happens. And I actually don't feel that doing one without the other is particularly helpful. So if all you're doing is overloading yourself with new things, new conversations, reading books, you're not giving yourself that gap for the new combination to rise to the surface. And if all you're doing is giving yourself time off, having a bath, then I kind of go into more of a slump rather than a creative spark. So I've got to find the place where the two things overlap.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I find the gap. I had a gap in painting on big paintings. That's true. I had a gap for a month or two because I was working on small things on paper. But the creative spark for me came when I got busier and busier and busier and there was no time to think. So I was so busy getting ready for my course and marketing and organizing things, and I could only squeeze in half an hour here or there. And in that half an hour is when the exciting things happened. I don't know if this is just me, but I also tend to find, like today, I've got a whole day almost for painting. Mm. I've got loads of things done last night and I've got a few hours this afternoon for painting. I think that'll be too long. I don't think I'll have the same. I almost need to cram it in between other things. It's like I'm tricking myself into not having time to plan anything.
Yeah, but that's a little bit what I'm talking about in this slump. It's like if you have all the time, a whole day for yourself, I'm just going to chill, I'm going to, you know, cook a nice lunch. That's not sparky. It's relaxing, but it's not sparky.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. And this is the other thing as well, is that I think there must be something that happens where it's almost like a habit thing, isn't it? Like exercise, the more you do it, the easier it gets, that you get creative spark idea babies happening because you're already you're already having these kind of ideas.
Yeah.
And then I have a page in my notebook from yesterday, and it's just a complete scribbly mess of, like, I started off with one idea and then it's like, oh, and this.
Yeah.
And that, it's really exciting, but it can carry you for quite a long time. But does it matter? Does it matter then if some of those don't come to fruition?
No, in fact, I was looking up before this. I actually did about 5 minutes of preparation today and Googled this, and I came across somebody saying, several different articles and a TED talk that were all saying the same thing. They were giving various habits of highly successful creative people, but what the habit they all agreed on was, you have to have lots of failures. Yeah. And lots of bad ideas to get to the one good one. So I think the fizzly ones count as failures. I don't think it's a problem to have lots of ideas that don't work out, because that's the only way you have the good ones.
But it's a problem if you have lots of ideas and never get to the stage of testing them. If they only ever stay as ideas, they're not doing you any favors, are they?
No. And I know there are some people, so I used to have a web designer who was like this. He said it was like he couldn't turn it off. And the ideas for different designs, different businesses, different, were constant. And he felt like he ended up actually, and he wouldn't mind me saying this because he was public about it, becoming an alcoholic, and he's now recovering. But a lot of that was, he said it was just like overwhelming torrent of, you could do this, you could do this, you could do this. And they all seem to be good ideas, and there's no time for them all. Now, I'm not to that extent, thankfully, but we might have people listening who are. And what do you do if you're that overwhelmed with that many ideas, apart from drinking too much?
So that's two ends of the spectrum then, isn't it? The ideas and never doing anything. They just stay as ideas. They just stay as potential.
And we never had time. Yeah, there were too many.
Well, so for him, but I'm saying if there are some people and they just have all these ideas and they never take that leap into, well, what would happen if? Let me just try this. Let's just do the first stage. It doesn't matter if it goes wrong. I'll learn from that, and then there'll be a version two. So the first stage, the first one end of the spectrum is people who never, you know, it's ideas, but they never happen. And then he's just total overwhelmed. So how... What's the process then? Because I don't think it is necessarily about deciding which one happens. How does it work for you then? Which things are the things that go forward and which just stay as potential ideas on the idea shelf?
Yeah, it's almost like some of them are like boulders going down a hill. And I couldn't stop them if I wanted to, because they just feel so good. And I can just know, but it's not always that way. So I was thinking, I had this idea a while ago to start a membership site. And then I thought, no, I don't want to do that. I don't think that's right. And I went months with that idea in the back of my mind without doing it, because it didn't feel right. And then one day I woke up with an idea for how I could do it in a way that was different, because I kept looking at the way other people do them and thinking I'd be no good at that, or it wouldn't work for me, or, you know, the way you do it, the way other people's membership sites work. I thought, no, that wouldn't be me. And then I one day just had this way of seeing how it could be. And I was like, right. And then I told everyone about it by that evening, because then I knew how it was going to be. So it's that, for me, again, sorry to bang on about intuition or whatever, but it's just that feeling inside of, yes, I know that's right. And I get really excited. It's like I can just feel the boulder start going down the hill and I'm just running after it.
Yeah, you can't hold it back at that point.
Yeah, but I have had a couple of things where I had that. And actually, one of them for me was our Mark This Time thing, where I really felt like I could see this whole website and this. And then for me, the boulder just kind of got so far and didn't get any further.
Yeah.
And who knows why, but I think you have to be okay with that. You just have to go, all right, it was the wrong boulder.
Well, I think the timing was tricky on that, wasn't it? I was certainly up to my, I couldn't take on it. You were imagining big projects and getting people involved. And I was just like, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah. And I didn't have the energy for that, as it turned out, because it must have not been quite right.
Yeah.
It must have just not been quite right. So, but I just wanted to go back to something you said, because it's fascinating. You said the tube, missing the tube was, and then you've been back traveling again, but you're missing getting on the tube and being around all that busyness.
Yeah.
For me, all, and I've said this before, but all those years away when I didn't live in England, and specifically this area, I didn't have any creative spark. Every time I did have little bits of it, and I'd take a workshop and it'd be about still lifes or something. And then I'd come back and be like, I just started not interested in painting this. Or I'd start a sketchbook and then I'd lose interest. We moved home, and within weeks I was looking up art degrees and trying to figure out how, and I didn't associate the two things. I didn't know it at the time, but I think it's the same thing with your tube or busyness of London. It's whatever it is that sparks that connection with us. If it's missing, part of our creativity is going to be missing. And in your case, because you know that, you can maybe find a way to, can you find a way to replace it with something else, is what I'm wondering.
Yes, I can. And the overarching feel of it is, how much your environment impacts on how you're feeling, because you know this creative spark is very much an emotional. You know, I don't think it's something that you can artificially generate. It has to come. I think you can create the right conditions for it, and I think the environment that you're in is a massive part of it. And certainly for people now who've been in the same goddamn environment for a very long time, when we don't have that being refreshed or renewed or reinvigorated, whether it is by getting outside and having a walk in the big open air or going to exhibitions or whatever it is that normally triggers it for you, it can be quite difficult. My environment at the moment is looking a little bit like Miss Havisham's wedding feast, covered with cobwebs, because I have been hoovering, but dusting is really not high on my priority list. And really, I kind of didn't think that it mattered that much. But after 10 weeks, we are getting cobwebs in all sorts of places. And I can feel it. I can feel it kind of dragging on me. And now I've got to do something about it in the next couple of days, because otherwise that will start pulling me down. And then there won't be any creative spark happening at all. And it's not that I tell you what, we've got open studios in 2 weeks. I can't tell you how pleased I am that I don't have to invite people into my house at the moment, because we have got remnants of all sorts of projects and floors by the kitchen table and all sorts going on. It is just not presentable at all. So it's not that I'm house obsessive. It's just that I know that when the house gets like that, I don't have that clear thinking space that gives me the opportunity to feel good about creating something. So I know that for me, that is part of getting the situation right and how I like my environment to be.
Yeah, and I'm finding actually with the new studio space, very much that applies to me in there. In my old space, it was so cramped and there was no storage, so I couldn't get it tidy. I just couldn't. There was nowhere to put anything. Now I've got the luxury of having that space to store unfinished paintings and things in. And the new space is quite clean and tidy. And it's making a huge difference to me. And I'm noticing that by the end of a painting session, I'm really messy painter. Everything's all over the place. It's just snap. And my water gets too dirty and I don't clean it, and my palettes get too full and I don't get a new palette. I just keep trying to go and everything gets muddy. Having the time, making the time to stop, tidy up and then start again is really helping me. And having all this big open space that's not all full of clutter is really helping me. And so I've got to be very conscious of not letting that space get And it just means a weekly cleanup, really. And this morning I went in and tidied up and got it all ready so that this afternoon when I go in, it's all ready for me. It makes a big difference. It, to me anyway. And I see people with studios where the floors are crusted with giant piles of paint and collage papers everywhere. And I know that's for some people their, you know, what makes them creative. To me, that would just really do me in. Can't handle it.
Mine gets a bit, while I'm working, it gets like that.
But do you have to have the cleanup?
Oh, yes. And yeah, to go into that space would make my skin crawl a little bit. I'd be fascinated in it if it was somebody else's work.
Yeah,
but it's not what feels the right space for me. Not everywhere, because it's too much in my head. It's too much.
Yeah, stimulus. Yeah, and not enough. I mean, just basic practicality. It's fine to have the creative spark, but then if I can't find the right color paint and I haven't got room on my palette to mix it and my water's all dirty so it turns the wrong color, then my great creative spark idea messes up anyway. So I just have to rein in my natural tendency to be messy and like drop an oil pastel on the floor and then stand on it and crush it all in and get it everywhere and then walk it into the house. But that's a whole other story of what happened yesterday.
But it's when those kind of things happen, that's a layer of frustration then, isn't it? Oh, I'm not getting the right colour. It's dirty. I've got to go and wash my brushes. And again, that's not the right kind of input you want. That's almost like a blanketing down. So, and whereas, you know, you talk, if you think of the idea about spark, there's a lightness and a life to it and a freedom and therefore creating the space that's right for that to happen for you. I think there are spaces where muddles and mix up and, you know, mishmashes of things. So, you know, when I'm doing collage, I deliberately encourage that because mm-hmm. when you get those random juxtapositions and things working, that often is a part where a new spark happens. So it's quite a difficult one to choreograph, I think. I think at this time, it's just worth thinking of, because if you're, you know, if you're listening and you're in a situation, you're thinking, oh, I've not really been feeling it. You know, having these ideas and these thoughts about what works for you and what you can do to get yourself a little bit more into that zone where it's more likely to happen.
Especially, here's one that I've come across. Well, the lockdown definitely caused this on a mass scale, but in the people coming into my free course, I've seen this before, but it's a lot of the people were working away creatively really well, and then something happened in their life, usually something negative. Somebody died, somebody got very ill, house burned down, some big shift happened, they got divorced, and the creativity just stops. And it's like what happened to everybody with lockdown. Something massive happens, a pandemic, all of a sudden. And how do you spark creativity again if what's happened is you are not the same person that you were, you know, a few weeks before?
I'm not sure that it's a question of not being the same person as you are. I think it's when those kind of things happen, it goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, because, you know, creativity, while it's an essential human thing, is not going to feed you necessarily. I mean, it's not going to feed you. I was going to say it's not going to feed you or keep you safe, but actually creative input is valuable in all sorts of things that you might be doing that would keep you safe and thinking about things and looking at things in a different way. But the kind of situations that you're talking about, if you're dealing with big emotional fallout or something happening with your housing, you're right back down at the beginning. You're right back down at those safety and physiological needs. And I think you have to look after those first to a degree, to allow space for creativity to come in, which is towards the top of the triangle, that, you know, the whatever it is, esteem and self-actualization at the top. And I don't think it means that you have to have everything sorted on those bottom layers, but I think it's probably almost like thinking about it in ratio. You've got to have a certain amount of that covered off. And I suppose, I think the only time that I've really felt that, and I've spoken about this before, you know, was when Theo was born and, you know, really early and in hospital and in intensive care. And I was at home with a baby in hospital, and you just go head down into survival mode because that's what you're doing. Like, there's no way I'm thinking of anything creative at that point. And actually for quite a significant period of time afterwards.
But so I think, and I do agree with that, but then the people who've joined the course, they're at the point where they've obviously felt like, okay, I'm ready now.
Yep.
But I can't do it. I'm stuck. I used to be able to do this, and that's where I feel like it's almost like you are a new person. Let's say a spouse died and you've crafted a new life for yourself and you've begun to come out of that period of deep mourning and now everything's different. But let's say you used to paint florals and you look at the florals you used to paint and you think, I just don't want to paint those anymore. That's not who I am now, but I'm not sure who I am. So it's almost like, because the very act of joining the course must mean that you want, you're starting to feel that come back, and yet you haven't got the sparks of the ideas. And for me, I think just doing something without any pressure to make anything is probably how you reignite the spark in that situation.
But that comes back into that putting yourself into an environment or a situation where it's more likely to happen, doesn't it? And midway, I'm looking at it now, midway between those two stages of, you know, the safety and then going up to the higher level is the love and belonging layer. And actually what people are doing when they say yes to a group course or an experience or even time on their own in their studio is they are giving themselves the approval, the okay to even be venturing into that space. And that perhaps is the gateway for it.
Yes, that's a good point. What was that for you? So after Theo,
that for me was admitting that I needed time out of the house, away from a baby, away from domestic stuff. And I used to drive across London every evening and do a life drawing class.
Right.
So it was getting back in touch with me and giving myself the okay that was something. And that was the thing that started it off for me.
Perfect. Yeah. So that's exactly what we're saying. So it's just giving yourself the permission to be in a situation because then the life drawing sparked other things for you. And then you wanted to explore more. And then
you have your boulder situation. Yeah. Then you have your one thing leads to another and you don't need to know what that's going to be yet.
Yeah.
You just need to have those initial sparks and just kind of keep following them, I think.
So this week we have a listener question, and Alice is going to read this one out for us.
Okay, so this is somebody asking, can we have an episode, but we're going to talk about it as a question here, that deals with the experience of childless or child-free women and their art. As a group, we're usually sidelined as being not quite women who don't quite know what life is about. I think if we're going to expand this into a full episode, we need to talk to more than just you and I about it. Yeah. But I think it's an interesting topic to touch on. Obviously it doesn't apply to me, but it applies to you. So let me ask you, as a childless, child-free woman, do you feel sidelined as being not quite a woman who doesn't know what life is about?
Well, no, but I've got a feeling I'm a bit clueless about how other people perceive this. So because when I lived abroad, I didn't really ever have that many women friends. I had work colleagues, but we never really made friends when we lived abroad. Our friends are all here. And my friends are either gay or just also childless for various reasons. I only have one close friend who has children, and she had them after I'd left for America. So I don't even know her children. She now lives in Scotland. I haven't met them. Anyway, point being, until we got back here and I made new friends, some of whom have families, I never actually recognized that feeling. So I'm a bit weird in that. But then I did, once I got back, recognize, oh, yeah, I don't have any children. And it seems like most people just get married and have children as kind of what you do. And I didn't want children. It's not that, you know, I'm fortunate that I would have had that choice, I believe. I don't know for sure, but I never wanted them and neither did my husband. So that was never an issue. So I don't feel that personally, but I have become aware in the last few years that people may be perceiving me that way, that I might be, you know, something wrong with me, and that they might either assume I couldn't have children and not want to bring it up, or wonder if I'm a bit weird. And the only person I ever discussed it with who has children is my neighbor. She said, well, no, I just assume that. She said, well, first of all, I'm jealous. And second of all, I just assume that you're missing some things, but I'm missing some things.
Yeah.
And we're just missing different things. So she didn't have that reaction. But yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? This is why we would need to talk about it with someone else, because I think I'm a bit missing the gene or whatever that makes me realize what other people might be thinking about this. And also because I'm now 57, even if I did have children, nobody would know because they wouldn't be living with me anymore. So,
but it comes back, doesn't it, to this idea of like, why are we actually sidelined, or are we just worried about all these other things that perhaps people might or might not be thinking about us? I think it's quite interesting the age at which people choose to have children, and I don't want to hijack this like back to people with having children again, but it's a huge difference. You know, do you choose to have your children fairly young, as I did, and now I feel I've got, you know, round two ahead, whereas we have a lot of friends who waited until they were well into their 40s for children, and they had a fantastic, in a way much richer life in their 20s and 30s than I did. They're traveling, their careers did different things. If they're married, they had an incredible time in their marriage where it was just two of them before children came along. It's just a different choice. It's just a different thing. And I'm aware that, you know, for some people it isn't a choice. And I think that that's a very different emotional thing, because it's something that is a struggle, and therefore you're perhaps a little bit more sensitive about. But in terms of how it relates with experience of that and making art, I find, apart from the whole issue of perhaps having more autonomy over your time, which, mm-hmm. yes, high degree of envy a little bit perhaps about that, it's a payoff I've been prepared to make. But the concept of children has never been a part of my art making at all. It's not part of a subject that I mean. It's almost for me, it's the opposite. Like, my art is like me. It's not about family or children or any of those kind of concepts. So there just isn't a crossover for me. So I was just really interested in this, that is there an experience of childless or child-free women that has an impact on what kind of art? And I guess it comes down to what kind of questions you want to be asking in your art in the first place. Or otherwise, I'm not sure how it's...
And the idea of being sidelined for that, I don't understand, because in any of my applications for things, no one's ever asked me how many children I have. So when I submit paintings for things, people don't know. What struck me about the question, and I want to be really sensitive about how I say this, because I don't want to hurt feelings, but often what upsets us is what is our hang up and not somebody else's. So it might be that this person, well, it is that they think that's an issue, and they think people are thinking that, when really people are thinking about their own problems and worrying about what you think about them for their choices. And therefore, it's so often in our own minds, we can choose. So you can choose to be clueless as I am and wander around the world not knowing. I mean, let's say someone up the road, or let's say a gallery owner thinks I'm less than because I don't have children. If I don't know she thinks that, I'm quite perfectly happy just going along my own way, and I'm happy with my own choices. So I think it's all about, and this comes with age, obviously, getting to a place where you're comfortable with yourself enough not to care about someone else's opinion of you, whether it's positive or negative. Because it must also be that it is the case that women with children suffer terrible discrimination, especially young children, because they'll be perceived. Let's say you were going to hire someone to paint a giant mural and it was going to take so many weeks to do, and but she's got young kids, and what if one of them gets ill and then she'll have to go home? I know now they're all home anyway, but in normal times, women with children have tended to suffer in the workplace and in careers because they've given up, they've taken a step back, and they get lower pay and all of that. And women without children have less of that problem. I was paid the same as men at my level. I had a successful career because I didn't have that break that so many women have to have. I was just able to carry on as if I was a man. Yeah, I can see there's just as much of a problem for women with children, perhaps more of a problem.
Yeah.
In career development.
I think it's a bit deeper though, and it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about before about Spark, in the sense that there's an underlying idea here that without children, the perception is that other people are saying you don't know what life is about, and that that can reflect into your art. And this is very similar to the idea, and all the people, as you say, who are coming into your group who have had something that has stopped them. It's just an ongoing thing, isn't it? We've just got to try and catch ourselves whenever we have those ideas that are somehow putting up barriers for us.
Yeah.
And just because double check, like, what am I making this mean? Because until you do the work on that and give yourself the ability not to just bulldoze through it without any consideration, I'm not saying that at all, but you have to reflect what's important for you. So I'm reading this comment, I don't know your name, you know, who don't know what life is about. What is life about? Once you're sure in the what is life about for you, who gives a monkeys what anyone else is interested in?
Yeah, because
and you won't feel sidelined about it is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, because if that's what it's about, so your friends who chose to have children later, or maybe not at all, they found out a lot of things about what life was about, which someone who had children younger didn't have chance to find out. Different aspects of what life's about. Life's not just about reproducing. That's one aspect of life.
Yeah.
But life's about so much more than that. And this is what, going back to what my neighbor said to me, she said, I've missed out on things and experiences that I will never have because I had children. But I think you've missed out on different experiences that you will never have. And who knows if those two things are
equal. And we all do. We all do in life. We can't live a million different lives. Yeah. We get our one.
I know. That's so annoying. I really just want all these different lives. I've said that before. I've got imagination of all these different lives I could have had. But funnily enough, when I imagine all those different lives, they never involve children.
Oh, really?
No, they always involve like me selfishly doing my own thing and not having to think.
Do you think you had a previous life where you had children and it put you off?
I don't know. I think maybe me as a child put me off.
Okay. Maybe that's where we should leave it.
So what's inspired this week? Alice has already said she's already covered what's inspired her. But I did have one thing I wanted to mention that has inspired me. And this is a fellow artist who a few months, was it even 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Perhaps at the start of lockdown, began to write these poems, or perhaps she's always written poems, but she started to share them. She actually calls them moems because they are like a moment captured in a poem. And her name is Tracy Elizabeth Downing. And these poems were really good, or moems, sorry, Tracy. And somebody said, or I don't know if she said, you should put them in a book, or maybe she said, I might make a book. And people were encouraging about the idea. And I've been thinking about a book for, 2 years now and done nothing. Mm-hmm. And Tracy has put out a book, got it published beautifully in Blurb with her illustrated poems, with all her own artwork, sent them out to people in just the period of lockdown. And it's a fabulous little book. So I'm not sure how you can buy it, but we will. Oh, have you put a, yes, you've put a link. So we'll put a link in the show notes, because it's too, you would go to tracyelizabethdowning.com and then it's /poems and gift card. But wherever you're listening to this, there will be a link to Tracy's website. But she's not paying me and I'm not plugging it. What really it was about it was just how inspiring it was to see someone have an idea, take action, get it done, even though it's difficult. And there were all sorts of things she had to work out in order to do that and get it out into the world. And who knows what will come of it now, but it's just absolutely fantastic. So it's really inspired me. I don't have the space at the moment to do my own book, but it's inspired me just to crack on and get things done.
And it was an idea that grew. What I really like about it was that it was an idea that grew with encouragement. It was hers initially. It was her spark. And it was by sharing that that everyone else said, these are lovely. I want to see more. Where can I read them? And it started off, it was going to be a printed at home book. And then she got enough interest that it was going to be, she said, fine, I'm going to investigate getting it printed properly. Now she's on the second print run. It's fantastic. It's just such a lovely memory of this time, because it's got poems that are funny. It's got heartfelt things. It's also a celebration of her wedding anniversary a little bit. I think it's 22 years, so there's 22 poems in there. And her husband helped her put it together. But yeah, go and have a look at that. I agree with you. Okay, that's my inspired too. I'm nicking yours.
One last thing, we would love for you to cast a vote for us. The British Podcast Awards are currently open for votes and you can vote for Art Juice. You just go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote and then there's a little search box. You type in Art Juice, it brings us up and you vote for us. It's really quick and easy to do. And we would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, and we know we're going to be up against the big boys. Like, we know we're going to be up against people with huge followings or BBC podcasts or all of those kind of things. But we think we have better listeners. So prove it, guys. Because we get a lot of downloads now each week. We're getting well over 5,000 downloads each week, and it's just growing week on week. So if you're new here and you're kind of thinking, oh, great, I can go back and listen to all the back catalogue, this would just be really fun, because somebody said to us, I don't know how you find the time. And if I actually add up the amount of hours we have spent in the last year and a half doing podcasts, recording podcasts, editing podcasts, sharing podcasts, this would be a lovely, lovely, lovely way to say thank you. So thank you very much.
Have a good week, everybody.
Bye-bye.